Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Good afternoon from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the August 21st, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, are you in a good mood today? I hope you are. And I hope you're ready to have some fun during the next hour, because we're going to have some fun. And why am I in a good mood, you ask? Do you have to ask? If you're a regular listener or even a longtime friend, you know that besides the space program, one of my greatest passions is my home football team. That's right, the Minnesota Vikings. And if you probably already know where this is going, that's right, Brett Favre returned to Minnesota this week, and he's going to play a couple of series tomorrow night on Sunday Night Football against the 49ers on NBC, which means you can all watch if you want. And if you're a Green Bay Packers fan and still upset by the whole thing, well, then all I can say right now on the radio due to FCC regulations is, well, have a nice day, won't you? Well, I'm also in a good mood because yesterday my wife Dawn and I celebrated our 27th wedding anniversary, and did so by heading over to Disney's Epcot, where for the first time since it was redone, I rode through the spaceship Earth ride. And while I continue to remain in a good mood today, I'll tell you it is not in any way due to what I experienced during that ride last night. You know, this show is all about the space program and everything and anything having to do with space, and certainly Spaceship Earth qualifies in my book. For years, I've loved Spaceship Earth, not only for the symbol of Future World at Epcot that it represents, and what a great piece of architecture, but because the ride inside, the ride itself, told the story of communications, the history of how we communicate with each other, and how as our technology evolved, you know, the world became smaller and more interconnected. And provided a means by which we could resolve our differences and live in peace. Now, that may sound a little corny to you, a little Disney-ish to you, but okay, so what? You know, in my heart, that's still what I think. In fact, it's what I think is probably the biggest benefit we've had in our space program so far, and will continue to be a huge benefit of having a space program. Communication satellites have shrunk the world, opened up ideas to people, and I think had a significant contribution to the end of the Cold War and the tearing down of the Iron Curtain. And I think at some point, as we continue to explore and evolve and move out into the galaxy, you know, we're going to have to realize that we all share this planet, and you know, we must find ways to get along. And I think the space program is going to help facilitate that, but. In any case, what I saw last night in the new Spaceship Earth ride, you know, well, look, let's put it this way. You know, I love all three of my kids, you know, and I'm sure every parent loves their kids, and they should. But, you know, sometimes they do things that disappoint you, and yet you still love them. And, in fact, son number three yesterday broke his cell phone. He had a little incident with gravity and learned that gravity falls at 32 feet per second per second, and that the cell phone that has a big piece of glass on it doesn't like that. And had to get a new phone today, but you know, disappointing. But that's okay. He'll learn, and we'll fix it, and we'll move on. Well, you know, I'm trying to look at Spaceship Earth the same way. It's something that I really love, and I've ridden it before. I've ridden it before, and I will ride it again. But was disappointed in what I saw and the way that they had remodeled it here for this latest incarnation. I'm not going to get into a lot of specifics. That's not the point of the show. But I will tell you a couple of things. First of all, that I thought that the new narration by Judi Dench was flat and emotionless. I think that Disney's writers have dumbed down the entire script of the narration, changed it in ways to be more politically correct, perhaps. A quick example there. There's a scene after Rome falls and the Library of Alexandria is burned. And if any of you have been on the ride, you know the smell of the smoke and all that. And they talk about how the information from the library was preserved. In fact, in this new incarnation, they talk about it being the first backup system. And then I thought that was clever, but... You know, originally when Walter Cronkite was the narrator, the script said that the information was saved by Islamic and Jewish scholars. And then in the later version of the ride, they used the words Jewish teachers and Islamic scholars as the folks that had saved the information. Last night I ride the thing and hear that it's now Arab and Jewish scholars that saved the information. So they replaced the word Islamic with the word Arab. Factually, probably still accurate, but again, in this sensitive time and political correctness and whatever it was that motivated them, those are the kind of things that, as a guy that's sensitive to history and as a guy that's sensitive to these kind of things, you know, kind of bothers me. And there were other examples of it throughout the ride too. We won't get into them, but you know, it's still not a bad show. And if you've not been on the ride before, you may not even care about the differences. It's still a good show overall. I will tell you that the second half of the thing coming down from the top of the sphere inside was just it was cute, but just what a waste of a half of an Epcot ride. So anyway, but had a good time. The kids probably will love it. I'm still loyal to it. I love staring at Spaceship Earth. It was a great symbol. After we went to Spaceship Earth, by the way, we went over to see Captain EO, the Michael Jackson 3D movie that came out in 1986. And Don and I went to that. Of course, it originally came out very early in our marriage before the kids came along. And despite what my boys now say about the show, because they can't stand it, the music, the special effects, all old school for them, Don and I still enjoyed the show. It just brought back all sorts of memories, you know, the 80s. Big hair, shoulder pads, neon clothing, you know, Dallas and moonlighting on TV. You know, those were interesting days, weren't they? Well, getting back more on topic and talking about what's coming up on the show today, you know, we are going to have some fun with my guest today, a good friend for many years who is a space history expert, an international recognized collector of space-related memorabilia and artifacts and other stuff, and probably the only person in the country who knows more space trivia off the top of his head than I do, Robert Perlman, will be joining me on the phone from Huntsville, Alabama, in just a few moments. And because of Robert's expertise and mine, I guess, we're going to do something a little different today, like they did on the old Johnny Carson Tonight Show. When they played Stump the Band, we're going to let you call in and see if you can't stump the chumps, or maybe the space chimps, as the case may be, with your space-related trivia question. If you call in with a trivia question and stump us, I'm going to reward you with a space-themed book, courtesy of the Apogee Books, with at least while our inventory lasts. I've got 6 books here I can give away. They're from authors and books that we've had on the show in the past. Reflections from Earth Orbit by Winston Scott, Apollo Ecom, Journey of a Lifetime by Cy Liebergott, The Rocket Team from Frederick Ordway, Astronauts Volume 1 by Ted Spitzmiller, Energy Crisis Solutions from Space from Ralph Nansen, and Selling Peace Inside the Soviet Conspiracy by Jeffrey Mamber. So my only rule right now is that I want general questions in nature. I don't want to hear one of you spacecraft engineers calling in and saying, what was the amperage of the backup electrical system used aboard the 12th GPS satellite launched from the Cape? But if you want to ask me where John Young got the corned beef sandwich he smuggled aboard Gemini 3 to give to Gus Grissom, well, I think we can talk. So anyway, give us a call to participate, 321-768-1240. Don't forget that AT&T wireless customers here on the Space Coast can dial *1240 on their phones and make a free phone call into the studio. Or send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com. Your questions don't have to be just trivia, by the way. We can answer all sorts of space-related stuff, whatever you've got in mind. Sound like fun? Good. Well, let's get started. We'll come back from this break and get right to it. This is Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and that's right, you're listening to WMMB.
Call Jim now, 768-1240, or *1240 for AT&T wireless customers.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Phone lines are open at 321-768-1240 for your calls and your space trivia questions. Once again, we're going to give away a few books while inventory lasts. By the way, these books come from Mila Solutions, my production company, not from WMMB. So once we get this done and the book doesn't come in a week, you can yell at me, but please don't call the station. I'm handling this myself. Once again, the email address to send in your questions or comments, if you like that way, spacetalking@AOL.com. Well, and the phones are ringing, and that's great to see. Stand by. We'll get to you in just a few minutes. But it is my pleasure at this time to introduce to all of you a very good friend of mine and a man who has done and is doing some of the things related to our space program that, frankly, I wish I had thought up of first. And Robert Perlman is an accomplished journalist, a sought-after space history expert, and a respected appraiser of space memorabilia, and again, just a great guy. He's the editor of Collect Space, absolutely the top online home for space history enthusiasts of all kinds. Go to collectspace.com to get to his site. And the only man, as I said, in America that I believe can out space trivia me, Robert Perlman. Welcome to Space Talk. How you doing, sir?
Very good. Thanks for having me, Jim. And I don't know about out-trivying you. We might have a tie there.
One day we'll set up a contest or something. But today we're going to put our heads together as we try to answer maybe some of the listeners' questions. A couple of folks have already lined up. But before we get to them, let's talk about you. I know that you live in Houston, but you're currently in Huntsville. And one of your claims to fame is that you are a member and inductee of the Space Camp Hall of Fame. Went in last year, and I think you're there for this year's ceremony. Tell us a little bit about that.
Indeed. I attended Space Camp 6 times as a kid. It was one of the best experiences of my life, and it was definitely shaped my career path moving forward. I was honored by being inducted into the Hall of Fame last year. This year, the Hall of Fame ceremonies were last night. We inducted 4 new members into the hall, including an author that some of your listeners may be familiar with, Francis French, who wrote the books co-wrote the books Into That Silent Night, Into That Silent Sea, sorry, and In the Shadow of the Moon.
Oh, okay.
Confused by the movie of the same name, but
right.
Both space histories. And it's been a great time here in Huntsville. My second favorite or my third favorite place to be at space-wise if I'm not at the Cape or in Houston. So
that's you know, and fine, here's a piece of trivia to share with you. Of all the places I have been to in my space-related career, going on whatever it's been, almost 30 years now, I have never been to Huntsville. Can you imagine?
You definitely need to make it up here. If not for anything else, that there is the only display of a vertical Saturn V. I'm too young to have seen one on the pad, so this is about as close as I get to see one vertically. And they also have, like Kennedy does, and also Johnson in Houston, they have a real Saturn V, the facilities demonstrator on its side. But they also have a replica that's standing, and I believe it's almost perfect size. I think it's 3 feet smaller than the real one, only because it's in the flight path of Huntsville International Airport here, and so it needed to just be 3 feet shorter than the real 363-foot moon rocket.
Ah, that's great. And, of course, loved your post on Facebook the other night where you got into Huntsville and you said, hey, I saw Saturn in the night sky, and you had a great picture of the Saturn illuminated. And that must be just an incredible sight to drive up to. But, you know, you talk about space camp and going as a kid. Was that what got you into space? Was there something else that drove you to follow this path?
I had an interest before going. Like any kid, I wanted to be an astronaut growing up. I think my earliest memory was around 5 years of age. I was asked who my heroes were, and I said it was Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin. And I really did want to be an astronaut. I had a couple other interests at that time, paleontology and others that normal kids follow. But space camp really solidified that it would be a career. Fortunately, my parents were very supportive of the idea. My mother, being a former teacher, had saved newspaper clippings from July 20th, 1969, and that became a treasured item growing up. They encouraged me to read a lot. I grew up in New Jersey, so we didn't really have much of of space available to us. The closest we had was to go to New York to the Hayden Planetarium, and we did that on occasion. But every summer, it was actually this month, usually the last week in August, they would send me off to space camp. And it was a week-long program, and I would come back, and I would be it would push me throughout the entire school year, that just to push forward in becoming a part of the space program.
Well, and of course, to have established after the online phenomena started and you started Collect Space, what was it, 2000, same 1999, something like that?
Collect Space was founded in 1999. It was a very serendipitous thing that it's become what it is today. It was not ever meant originally to be a site for the public. I'd been developing space websites since 1994, and I'd always had a personal site. I was moving at the time, and I created Collect Space simply to catalog my personal collection as I was moving. This was way before that we had Google, though, and or other major search engines, and so I never really understood how, but a couple of people found the site and asked me if I was going to post information about space memorabilia at first and then space history later, and responding to their desires, I started building out the site, and today we have a monthly readership of about 250,000 on-site. We have over 35,000 registered members, and we syndicate our content, our news articles, out to Space.com, Fox News, MSNBC, and Yahoo News, and so we have a combined readership of about 1.2 million a month.
And it's an incredible site, and it's one of those must-stops every day that space guys really need to do. But, you know, you talk about the collecting. Robert, you know, what growing up in New Jersey, what were you able to collect? When did that bug hit you? What was some of your early items?
Originally, it was the newspaper clippings my mother gave me and some books that I was able to pick up at the local bookstore. It never really dawned on me that I could write away for autographs, and so I didn't really understand that. I did one year when I was attending space camp. My father was an optometrist, and there was an optometrist going up on the space shuttle, Dr. Larry DeLucas on STS-50, and I called and pretended to. I called NASA, I called JSC, and pretended to be my father, Dr. Perlman, and talked my way into getting Dr. Larry DeLucas to call me back.
You mean you were Dr. Perlman?
Yes, Dr. Perlman calling for a very important reason to talk. I'm positive, now I'm pretty much positive, that the crew secretary must have known that she was talking to a kid. But she humored me, and about an hour later, the phone rang, and it was Larry DeLucas, and I gave up immediately. No, it's not my father, it was me.
Mm-hmm.
And he sent an autograph through the mail, and so that became a treasured item. But it wasn't until there used to be a magazine, and I'm sure you're familiar with, called Final Frontier.
Oh yeah.
And they ran an article about space memorabilia collecting, and they profiled this gentleman named Ken Havicott.
Oh, good old Ken, yeah.
Yes. Here, he's still in Merritt Island.
Right.
And I wrote him through the magazine saying that I didn't even know you could collect space memorabilia. And about a month later, a box arrived, a really large box, and it was filled with memorabilia.
Oh.
And a letter from him that said, here's what you need to do. Look through the box and find out what you like.
Yeah.
And then once you know what you like, then you can use all the other stuff as trade items.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how the collection started growing.
Of course, Ken is a fixture around here at the Cape and a first-class guy, one of the best guys I've ever known throughout my whole career. So that was the early stuff. We've got just a couple minutes here. I think I want to take a trivia question just to give everyone a feel for what we're going to do here. So let's pick up at the top here, and let's go to Mark from Rockledge. We've got about a minute or so. Mark, what's your question?
Just a real quick one on a little bit of history, maybe predates all of us. Understand that when the U.S. First got their rocket scientists, they were guidance specialists, and the Russians, when they got theirs, were pretty much engine specialists. And when we first started launching rockets, we have to go through a roll maneuver in order to get to the pitchover phase. And for the U.S., we were able to accomplish that on board the rocket. But my understanding is the Russians did it a different way, and I was wondering if you knew what that was.
Let's see, Robert, I'm going to take a first crack at it. My understanding of the Russians and the way that they did their steering in the early days was literally to point it in the right direction. so that there wasn't any kind of roll. The pad could rotate or whatever, so that when it lifted off, it was immediately on the right course. That's the best recollection I have of the early days. You want to add anything to that?
That would be about what I've my familiarity. I will admit my strength is mostly on the U.S. side, I will defer to your judgment here, Jim.
Okay. Aaron, you're going to have to make a call. Was that correctly answered, or did he stump us? Well, Aaron's going to have to make up his mind. Stand by, Mark. Okay, we'll talk to you in a minute. We've got a break coming up here in just a few seconds, so we'll stand by. I want to invite you to give us a call, 768-1240, for your questions and comments. Check us out at spacetalking@AOL.com for email. And when we come back here in just a few 2 minutes, we're going to talk more with Robert Perlman. We're going to actually take our five-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour. News, weather, sports, all of that going to get caught up. And when we come back again, more space trivia, more space talk right here. I'm Jim Behnke, and you are listening to WMMB.
Be here for the heroes in orange jumpsuits.
Be here to feed your curiosity.
Be here for the goosebumps.
Major goosebumps.
Be here for the eye-opening.
Jaw-dropping.
Excitement.
Of exploring space.
Be here for a day of fun.
And a lifetime of inspiration.
Be here at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Now through September 6th, Florida residents receive a free child admission with each paid adult. Restrictions apply. Download your coupon at kennedyspacecenter.com/Florida.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
Indeed. Welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. 321-768-1240 is the number. Local AT&T wireless customers can dial *1240. And both those calls will get you into the studio here. Or if you prefer to communicate online, once again, send your email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Today on the show, my friend and editor of collectspace.com, Robert Perlman. And Robert, we're going to go right to Mike from Melbourne with a trivia question for us. See if he can win a book. Mike, what's on your mind?
Yes, Mr. Perlman, Mr. Behnke, good afternoon.
Sir.
I got a three-parter here.
I'll get my paper out. All right.
Who was the commander of the first shuttle launch?
Okay.
Where did he go to college?
Okay.
And how was it determined before they landed that the tiles were not going to be a problem?
Tiles not a problem. I got two out of the three, Robert. What about you?
I've got, the first one's the give me.
That's the easy one. That's John Young.
John Young.
That's right.
Where he went to college.
I'm guessing. Would you want to guess the Naval Academy, or do you think it's more of a state college thing?
I would think the Naval Academy, but I do not know his biography well enough.
Yeah, I think you're gonna maybe Mike, you're gonna win a third of a book here. I don't know. The tiles. My understanding of the tiles was that they did a pull test. That once you glued them on, which is kind of a standard thing, you kind of do this pull test to make sure that they're not gonna fall off. And I don't think that procedure has changed throughout the years. Do you know anything more about that, Robert?
Well, I know there was concern on STS-1 that the tiles were because when they transported Columbia to the Cape from Edwards, they lost tiles, a considerable number of tiles, just on the 747 ferry. Which made them relook at how the tiles were affixed. And I know that there was significant tile damage to the orbiter as well, because there were a number of tiles that had to be removed after the flight, and those became souvenirs for many of the JSC and KSC employees.
Yeah.
But how they knew that it was not damaged to the point of before reentry, the only thing that comes to mind is that I know on a number of the early flights they used a telescope in Hawaii, I believe it was the Mauna Kea telescope, to observe the shuttle as it flew over. It was and they collected data. There were pictures published in an early issue of Aviation Week that showed some of that orbital imagery that later would come into play when we were investigating the loss of Columbia in 2003.
Yeah, and Mike, let me ask you, was that more the nature of your question, that once they got in orbit, how do they know they didn't miss any tiles?
Well, the amount of damage that had been done to the tiles, but the Malabar Test Annex down here,
right?
Somehow they determined that, and I found that out through Aviation Leak, you know, the week after the shuttle went up,
And I think they had a camera down. That was one of the sites where they had a camera, which you didn't want to talk about.
I don't know. Well, that's why it was in Aviation Week,
right?
but also, John Young went to Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Georgia Tech. Of course, he graduated from Orlando High School. But when you said college, I thought, oh shoot, I didn't know that one.
Okay.
But didn't know. So hey, Mike, stand by, and Aaron's going to take your address and pick a book, pick whichever one of the six that are there. He's got the list. And we'll take care of it for you, okay?
Okay, thank you, gentlemen, and thanks for having the program on the air. It's very informative.
Mike, I really appreciate you calling in. That's great. Thank you very much. Well, Robert, let's talk. Now, you mentioned DeLucas, and I'm going to guess then that was the first astronaut you ever talked to. Who was
actually not.
No, I was about to ask, who was the first astronaut you ever met?
First astronaut I ever met was Deke Slayton.
Really?
One of the original seven, of course. The Princeton Planetary Society was, which was a chapter of the Planetary Society, was holding an event with the National Space Society at Princeton University, and I convinced my parents to drive down to Princeton from where we were in West Orange. We entered this college lecture hall. I was the only kid of 11 years old standing amongst all these college students. And Deke gave a talk about how his company at the time, which was a commercial launch company, was dealing with mitigating space debris. And so at the end of his talk, I shot up my hand and asked a question, because I had just written this report for elementary school about space junk. And so afterwards got to go up and talk with him. And then at that same event, Charlie Walker was there, first payload specialist, and he was there representing the National Space Society. Well, it would be a number of years later, after going to college, that I would go to work for the National Space Society,
right.
And Charlie and I would reunite. And I still had my photo taken with him back then, and it turned out he remembered me. Because he didn't remember me specifically, but he remembered the little kid that was at the college lecture. So it was a great reunion.
Charlie Walker, I could tell you stories about him too. And he used to be here for Space Congress all the time, and we'd sit together and try to, you know, like nudge each other in the shoulder to try not to fall asleep during the paper sessions. That's a lot of fun. Well, okay, so more on the idea of space trivia, you're going to learn more about me. Who, Robert, do you think was the first astronaut out of, you know, it's an unfair question, out of the 300 people that have been in space or whatever. Who was my first astronaut? Do you want to guess?
First astronaut.
I could probably give you 10 guesses and you still wouldn't get it because, you know, it's so difficult and obscure.
Well, let me ask a hint on that one. I'll just take a guess.
Okay, I better give
I'll guess Wally Schirra.
I better tell you it was a female.
Oh, okay.
Narrows it down, doesn't it?
It does. All right. It would be too obvious to say Sally Ride, so I'll say Ray Seddon.
Oh, ding, 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 ding. That's great. Yeah, it was. It was Ray Seddon, 1978, and I was in Minnesota, and I had been selected as and this is bragging now, Minnesota's outstanding sophomore leader by the Hugh O'Brien Youth Foundation, and I wound up going to New York City, and she was a speaker, and she autographed by a little program, and I reminded of it her years later, and it was kind of the way that we bonded, and we've been friends ever since. And so she was the first. I know that when you went on in your career, of course, we both of us been very fortunate to meet a lot of the guys. You actually, I think, didn't you do a website for Buzz Aldrin at one point?
I did. I did his first website when he came out with his first novel, Encounter with Tiber. The web was just reaching popularity then, and he asked for a website for it, and I built it for him. It was buzzaldrin.com. He still has buzzaldrin.com, but it's a completely different iteration than what we built originally.
Than what you had started. Now, let's go back to some space collecting talk, because when you first started Collect Space, as I recall, you know, it was an interesting thing. It was very insider, almost like you were saying you didn't really even want people to know about it. And in those days, you know, Neil Armstrong would sign an autograph and the other guys. And then suddenly, as eBay really became popular and suddenly space memorabilia became a big deal. And I don't want to blame eBay for it, but what – I don't know. Was it just us young kids growing up and hitting a certain age and a certain income level? Or – I mean, how do you explain the tremendous interest in space – memorabilia and the incredibly high prices that people will pay now for stuff?
Sure. Well, Neil, for the record, Neil stopped signing around 1994. So he precludes he precedes his decision before CollectSpace comes on in 1999. But I think and it's not just space memorabilia, it's an interest in Apollo and in the history of the program altogether can be traced back to the 25th anniversary of Apollo 11, because there you start to see within the 1994-95 time frame, you see the release of Apollo 13, the movie, which did a lot for bringing the public awareness of a reminder of the heydays of the Apollo program, and then you see Tom Hanks and Ron Howard and Brian Glazer go off and do other projects like From Earth to the Moon.
Okay.
I think that you, with space memorabilia in general, I think it was that people reached an age where it wasn't just about history, it was about nostalgia. It was about what they remembered from their childhood.
Okay.
So there's not only a desire of wanting to own a Neil Armstrong autograph today because he was the first man on the moon, but it's also because you remember maybe owning a Neil Armstrong autograph when you were a kid, and you would have no idea where it went,
it is
something that has a universal appeal, not just to space memorabilia collectors, but also to just people who enjoy collecting Americana and collecting the history of technological endeavors.
Give us a sense here. We've just got about a minute from our next break, Robert. A little less than that. What's the most expensive piece of space memorabilia artifact that you're aware of or have come across yourself?
All right. Well, a full Soyuz spacecraft sold at Sotheby's in 1993 for $1.6 million.
Jeez.
Next after that would have to go to a set of patches that was sold by Christie's in 1999. They were on the spacesuit. They were on Jim Irwin's spacesuit while he walked on the moon, stained in moon dust. And those sold for, there were two sets. One sold for $310,000, another sold for $358,000.
And tell me real quick, what does a Neil Armstrong autograph presentation go for these days?
It can range wildly, but about the minimum you're going to look to pay is about $300 to $400 for just a signed card, up to, if you have a pristine example of his autograph on a photo that was not inscribed to anyone, you could be looking at $1,000 to $2,000 or $3,000.
Wow, that's incredible. We're going to take a quick last break here. Be back more with Robert Perlman. This is Space Talk. I'm Jim Behnke. You're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. It'll be about the fastest 8 minutes you're about to have here. My guest in the final moments, CollectSpace.com editor and overall good guy, space cadet Robert Perlman, 2009 inductee into the Space Camp Hall of Fame. Robert, stand by. I want to go quickly to Alice from Melbourne with a question comment. Alice, you still there?
Well, actually, Jim, if you weren't a Minnesotan, I would have hung up a long time ago. I've got a meet and greet for candidates, and it's starting to rain here, so I've got to get the food over to the clubhouse. So I can't talk very long, but I want to say that I have been to Huntsville, and it is really a nice town. But the first time I was there, we had an emergency landing at Huntsville Airport when we iced up over that area, and it was just wonderful to be able to land in one piece from a Beechcraft Musketeer.
Oh, my.
But what I wanted to comment about with you, Jim, is the fact that you are going to go on the first annual WMMB Radio Tea Party cruise in November, and there is still time to get on that cruise. So I just was hoping that some of your listeners could call Cruise Holidays of Vieira, and I don't work for them, but I am looking forward to a lot of people from Brevard County going on this Royal Caribbean cruise, and I hope that they could call Cruise Holidays and get on board.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Alice. Thanks for that.
And by the
plug.
Way, we could talk about Brett Favre and the Vikings when we're on board, too.
We will talk about them, and we will talk about space and whatever else comes up.
Okay.
Thanks, Alice.
That's
I appreciate
great.
You hanging out.
Comes out to my meet and greet tonight. Okay.
There you go, Alice, saying goodbye. Yeah, Bill, very kindly, Bill Mick asked me to join the cruise. Don and I are going to go on the cruise. I didn't know it was going to be a tea party cruise. We tend to be a little bipartisan around here on this show, but happy to join everybody who wants to be on that cruise. It's the first weekend in November. Just go to WMMBAM.com for more details. Robert, I wanted to ask you again. We were talking about Neil Armstrong and all that. What's a quick way for a guy to get into this right now? What's a beginner's entry level thing for collecting space?
Sure. Well, one thing that's very simple is that you can still write to Johnson Space Center, to the astronaut office, and request autographs of astronauts who are in the program. Can't ask for someone who has left the program since, but you can write a letter to your favorite astronaut who's in the program, who might be coming up on an upcoming mission or just returned from space. And you have a pretty good chance of receiving a reply with an authentic autograph. And so that's just the cost of a stamp. In addition to that, there are sites like eBay where you can find memorabilia listed. There are a number of more trusted sites like astronautcentral.com and spaceflory.com and farthestreaches.com, which deal with space memorabilia and have the knowledge to be able to discern what's real from what's fake. If you're looking to get into my personal favorite, which is to get into flown memorabilia, items that flew in space, there's one way to get involved today, which is like Topps cards, Topps baseball cards of anything, released what they called relics cards, which have little pieces of actual flown in space material on them.
Wow.
Part of their history relic history heritage series for this year. And so, see, for the price of a pack of cards, you might discover a small piece of insulation that flew on Atlantis or Columbia.
Wow.
or one of the other shuttles.
You had to tell me about that, didn't you? I'm gonna have to go out right now. That's great. That is absolutely great. Well, let me ask also. You know, I wanted to tell you about my most prized possession, which is a Neil Armstrong autograph. But it's signed on the side of a slide of me watching Neil walk on the moon. It's one of those old Kodachrome slides, 35-millimeter slides, a picture my dad took. Mom on all her glory in her 1969, evening attire on the couch watching it. Now, to me, that's priceless. But to a collector, it's the autograph, but, probably not worth a lot. What do you think?
It certainly does have value because anything signed by Neil Armstrong does have value, but I think that the market value definitely would be less than the sentimental value in this case.
Yeah,
and that's not a bad thing. Any given day, I through collect space, hear from collectors asking how much is this item in my attic, or how much is this item that my grandfather left me, or that I have because I worked for the space program, and I'm happy to tell them and I'm happy to share with them, but. I encourage them to hold on to these items as family heirlooms. You mentioned eBay before the break, and eBay has made a change in the way that we deal with collectibles that we have in our possession. That there's this option of selling it, whereas before you might have to consign it to an auction or go to a flea market or such. eBay's made it very easy, but there's something really to be said about holding on to these items and passing them down. Through generations, or donating them to an archive or local library or museum I mean, in addition to the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex you have there, in Titusville around the corner, you have the Space Walk of Fame Museum. And that whole museum is built from items that were kept by workers who then donated them to the museum. And it's a phenomenal way to get a sense of not just the history of the program, but the culture that grew up around the space program.
Wow, that's
that's part of that's just as important to the physical to the actual facts and figures that took us to the moon and flew the space shuttle for the past 30 years.
I couldn't agree more, and it's that kind of stuff that I particularly resonate when it comes to our space program. Robert, we're out of time with you, sir. Thanks for being on. We're going to have you on again. I want to sometime do a space collectible program where people can bring in their goodies and we can appraise them and we can have a little show or something. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff we can do. But enjoy the rest of the time in your Huntsville, and we'll probably see you here for the Discovery launch here in November.
Will do, and I'm happy to come on whenever you invite me.
Good. So. Thanks, Robert. Talk to you soon, buddy. Okay, take care. There goes Robert Perlman. Collectspace.com, the website that you want to check out. Well, real quick, launch schedule-wise, Falcon 9 from SpaceX still looking for a late September flight with their Dragon spacecraft. They did a Dragon test of a parachute system out west this week, was successful. So as soon as that testing looks good and they can lock in a date and get that one off the ground, Delta IV Heavy looking like October 19th still with an NRO, National Reconnaissance Orbiter payload, and again, Shuttle Discovery following on November 1st on what it's going to be its final mission to the International Space Station. The Atlantis mission, the extended mission, if it happens, is now looking like it's going to happen in June. Potential date that they've been talking about this week was June 28th. So circle that on your calendar for long term, that we may have our last shuttle launch forever on June 28th of next year. Let's see, what other business? I want to remind everybody to certainly vote in your primary this week here in Brevard County and in the state of Florida. We're having a primary election. If you're registered to vote, and I hope you are, please make your voice known. Space is a big topic locally here in Brevard County, as I think all of you are aware. And I'm not going to endorse any particular candidate at this time, but I certainly want to encourage all of you to participate in the process. Next week, my guest will be former NASA astronaut Charlie Precourt, who is now with ATK, the makers of the solid rocket booster. We're going to talk to Charlie about the future of all that. And by the way, Wolfie's was where the corned beef sandwich was bought in Cocoa Beach. Long since gone. That's it for today. Thanks again for listening. Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance, production of Mila Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer. The Home Mortgage Law Show is next here on WMMB. I'm Jim Bankey. We'll talk to you again real soon.